This is Future Water,
where we talk about all the ways which companies, utilities, and people are addressing the challenges and opportunities in water. World's in a seemingly crazy and disjointed place as climate, COVID, and geopolitical issues influence water markets. So today we're going to step back a little bit, go higher in altitude, and we're going to talk about what's happening in global water, sort of jump around the world for hotspots related to all of those issues. And to do so, we're going to bring in Chloe Meyer and Keith Hayes, who are in Europe and can share some perspective on what's happening around the world. But before we do that, let's jump into a couple news items that I want to share with you. One, a UN report was released this past week, and the findings included, as populations grow, the number of people with inadequate access to water is expected to rise to more than 5 billion by 2050. That's up from 3.6 billion in 2018, according to the report. Also, the report found that 25% of all cities globally are already experiencing regular water shortages. So, guys, I hate to say it, the problem's not going away. What can we do? We're going to have to deploy new technology, new business models, and start thinking more about water. But hey, that's not a secret. It's in the news every day. It's really a matter of execution. Secondly, Norwegian hydro levels are at their lowest in more than a decade for this time of year. As a result, it seems like the Nordic region is facing a pretty bad power crisis because the reservoirs, the declining water levels, as we're seeing out west as well, are impacting hydropower. As a result, hydropower prices or power prices are five times higher than they were a year ago. So inflation is rocketing upward, which is a problem. But data on the availability of water is as significant as, you know, the power markets, you know, when it comes to gas and other power supplies. No one really seems to think about water, but really water is the lifeblood of not only the power sector, but also just industries and households. Events like this give way to an acceleration of the energy transition, or you could argue that it'll cause a pullback as we rely more on fossil fuels that already exist to offset the impacts on hydropower. But this is a problem that should not be overlooked as companies look to set up facilities globally, but also when it comes to just investment and the opportunity for water management really manifests itself in greenfield development of new factories, mines, and supply chains. Important news. And then lastly, first half of 2021 saw the highest six-month deal flow recorded by Bluefield Research to date. There were 239 water related acquisitions globally that Bluefield tracked. Private water sector, meaning utility acquisitions primarily, and digital water segments contributed really to the lion's share of the deals, while midstream water for oil and gas, diversified or strategic investments, and network and distribution segments saw the greatest growth in deal flow relative to the first half of 2020. So lots of good data out there that we've been tracking, and we just released a quarterly report on that. So if you're interested, reach out and let us know how we might be able to help you out. So let's not linger. Let's get into it with Chloe and Keith. All right. I'm joined here today by Chloe Meyer and Keith Hayes. One of you is in Barcelona, the other in Paris. So Chloe, how are things?
Fine. Happy to be here.
Nice. What about you, Keith? What's going on?
Yeah, doing well, Reese. Good to hear from you again, as always.
Nice. So let's jump into it, guys. As I was mentioning in the intro, you guys have been working on projects covering the globe, looking at a number of different things, everything from infrastructure, digital water, you know, and so on. But also, we've been digging into sort of recent trends, whether it be climatic events in the global space. And by that, I mean really outside of the US and Canada. So Chloe, we're about to have a quarterly report to come out. I saw it the other day. I at least reviewed a draft of it. So why don't we focus on a couple takeaways or things that you were seeing over the last quarter and maybe even going forward? Can you highlight some of those things and what's happening when it comes to the impacts on water and wastewater management?
Sure. So a big trend of the past few months has been first climate-related events having a huge impact from Asia to Latin America. For instance, in the Middle East, we've seen that Iran has been facing steady decline of rainfall over the last decades. And this trend actually coincides this year with the country's increasing dam construction, including four new dams added to Iran's largest river this year only. However, of course, extreme heat and evaporation have limited reservoir supplies and left municipalities short of demand for water and hydropower. And this contributed to causing power outages over the summer and led to the government to ban cryptocurrency mining, a major energy consumer and water user in Iran. Droughts and water shortages are also threatening the economy of Chile, which experienced the driest year of a 12-year running drought. The government over the summer asked regulators to clamp down on water use and seek alternative sources in fear of an approaching day zero, the day when the taps run dry. This is a threat that already prompted major restrictions in Cape Town, South Africa, and Chennai, India in recent years. And in Chile, the decrease in reservoir levels had a direct impact on electricity production, as hydropower represents almost 30% of the country's installed capacity.
So if I could interrupt there for a second, Chloe, I mean, Keith, maybe bringing you into this. I mean, one question about Chile is they're going through reforms separately as well, like, you know, constitutional reforms more significantly, but also, you know, water is a big part of that discussion. I don't know if you've worked on projects in Chile, whether on desal related projects, but also helping companies look at that market. Any perspective that you could share?
Yeah, I mean, you know, for those who don't know, I mean, sort of the backstory on Chile. Chile is a highly privatized municipal water sector, so they've mirrored themselves off of the UK in the sense that there are a set of, I would say, 10 or so regional, privately owned water utilities that, for decades now, have, you know, been regulated and the government has, you know, set their tariffs. And at the same time, you know, that model has come under a lot of pressure with, you know, what's been happening to the economy, but also just the resource risk. Chile's main export, one of its main exports, is copper mining, highly dependent on having water available for their mining sector up in the northern part of the country. And, you know, really, I think what the country is moving towards, at least for the private sector, is more of a use it or lose it type approach, because there are some private owners of, you know, water rights that are not making an efficient use of those resources, and that needs to change going forward. And obviously it's happening within a broader sort of political crisis. There were protests towards the end of last year in Chile because they raised the price of metro tickets in Santiago. They're obviously having rolling blackouts, having the pandemic have not helped. And so, you know, I think water is obviously a reflection of bigger challenges they have. And I think they're trying to take it a lot more seriously.
I mean, it's really interesting. I think the thing about Chile is it's, to Chloe's points, there's like this convergence of all these factors. In the northern part of Chile, you end up in the Andes, you have the mining sector, which is using a lot of water. So that's obviously, you know, things like copper mining and driven by Codelco is obviously a significant part of the economy. Yet at the same time, you've got the private water ownership within the country as well. And there's sort of disruption there, whether privatization is in fact the way to go or in the best interest of the people. And I think even when we said probably 6 months, probably a year ago now, you know, we were looking at the Canadian company Algonquin, who went in to, they went into Chile. They own Liberty Utilities in the U.S. and they acquired an asset, part of Aguas Andinas, I believe. But they acquired assets in Chile. So there's a lot happening there. And then to your point, Chloe, the issue with, you know, water, with the water power nexus, if you will, that seems to be a common theme, not only in your quarterly, where you saw other issues of that around the world, like you mentioned Iran, but also other markets.
Yes, I mean, definitely the water energy nexus is at the forefront of concerns, and hydropower plants all over the world are being disrupted because of water shortages. And in general, or the result is a potential shift to fossil fuel generation to fill the power gap. Going back to Chile, the country has set itself the goal of being carbon neutral by 2050. Which is an objective that requires, of course, the shutdown of coal-fired plants. But over the summer, as the reservoir levels were decreasing, one of the retired coal-fired units was reactivated to support electricity production. And the Chilean National Electricity Coordinator actually forecasted that diesel use could increase back by 10% in the country's energy matrix by the end of the year. Drought has also been threatening China's 5-year plan of reducing fossil fuels in energy consumption. In southern China, for instance, hydropower dams have been under provision and the coal plants are actually struggling to meet a rising demand driven also by a strong economic rebound after COVID. And limiting impacts of drought by diversifying further into renewable and potentially nuclear power will be key for the future of China, definitely.
I think it raises the question. I mean, I think why we're interested, and this was a brief conversation we had before jumping on this, and that is, you know, the impact of, you know, looking at water energy, and really what does it mean for the water sector as a whole? And I think what it does in the very near term, does it disrupt or raise questions about the energy transition and what's happening in that, whether it be switching towards renewables and away from water-intensive fossil fuel generation towards renewables or battery power as well. And so, you know, it doesn't have to be, as we're learning, at least in the U.S., it doesn't have to be yes or no. All you have to do is raise doubt, and then there's a lot of confusion and questions about maybe the best plan of action. So I think that's really interesting. So to your point, though, maybe it's a good segue, is looking at climate, but also in Europe as well. I mean, I know over the summer there were a number of different floods which caused significant amount of damage. I guess my one question is maybe bring us up to speed on what's happening related to that. But also, when we think about it, are countries or governments or the EU more broadly looking at the role of water, energy usage, and infrastructure when it comes to climate, and how they're going to invest or where they're going to invest the dollars?
Right. So indeed, I mean, on the other end of the spectrum of going away from droughts, Europe has been flooded over the summer. In July, Germany, Belgium, Luxembourg, and parts as well of France and Austria experienced extreme rainfalls that led to the actual worst flooding in several decades in Central Europe. And the economic impact to European countries is estimated at over $300 billion, and it really signals a growing concern for water-related climate risk going forward, with impacts out of the soil water sector. But circling back to your question, indeed, I mean, as you know, the European Union set last year a extraordinary recovery and resilience facility of over 700 million euros along its regular budget to support the recovery from the COVID-19 pandemic. And two of the key focuses of that plans are around digital and green solutions. the EU countries have should have officially submitted their plans to tap into that mechanism by April this year. However, the deadline is actually pretty flexible, and the Commission is still receiving plans through next year, mid-2022. Comparing the national plans for energy efficiency and green solution is quite challenging because they present very different structures. But what we've seen in the plans is a focus in line or to achieve the goal of being carbon neutral by 2050. And this applies to the water and the wastewater sector as well, of course. For instance, Belgium and Spain have laid out plans to develop smart water and wastewater system as a way to improve management efficiency and day-to-day or real-time monitoring of infrastructure. Germany is continuing its ongoing efforts to reduce carbon footprint with a focus on wastewater, for instance, through methane capturing and heat generation through sludge. It's a strategy that France is copying or adopting a very similar approach. And outside of the EU, but still in Europe, we have the UK, of course, that set up a very ambitious roadmap to make the water sector climate neutral by 2030. The strategy combines new technology, demand reduction, emission removal, and presents the best opportunities for optimizing costs and investments. And clearly, energy efficiency is a very obvious target of water utilities, and I think a very pressing objective, as we've seen this year, the energy prices, whether it is for electricity or gas, have been increasing so much and actually really going through the roof. In France, we've seen gas price increasing by 70% since the beginning of the year.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've going back to your comment about droughts and hydropower, I think even in places like Norway, like power prices have gone up 5 times. I think that was a number. They're seeing just a spike in power. So inflation, which depending on where you are, it's not always counted in inflationary and sort of the inflation numbers, but energy prices are definitely through the roof. Well, I mean, so based on what we've been talking about already, there's seemingly a lot of demand for water management solutions and an opportunity. So, I mean, to that point, Keith, I mean, let's just talk about M&A briefly or sort of what you're seeing in the market. It seems, I made a comment actually on LinkedIn the other day about the market seems a bit frothy. Would you agree with that, or was I going out on a limb?
Yeah, it is an interesting timing. Obviously, ourselves internally, we've had a lot of private equity funds approaching us, looking at a lot of different assets. And that is because, you know, maybe money is cheap because they've become generally more concerned about water because water, these disasters we've seen, whether we're talking about droughts or floods in the US or Europe or elsewhere, have made it much more front and center or top of mind, as if you will, for investors. And, you know, I think the sustainable investment, a lot of it was driven by emissions reduction, carbon footprint, and I think now, you know, green bonds, and now you're starting to hear about blue bonds. So the idea here is that water is forming much more a part of the overall conversation about sustainable investment. And so that takes different forms, whether it's bond issues or it's taking equity stakes in technology companies or, you know, financing rounds to help scale up some of these smaller companies. So we're definitely seeing that.
Yeah, I mean, I would say, I think, if I recall, in our latest waterline, what do we, you know, the first half of 2021 was, at least as far as our records go, it was the busiest half of a year, definitely over the last 5. So it's been pretty busy. Like you said, there are a lot of players or companies, both strategic and financial, trying to get in the space. I guess to your point about corporate water management, this is one of the things that we've been looking at and sort of sorting through, like, what does all this mean? And I guess there's a little bit of skepticism. Maybe it's healthy skepticism about, you know, when corporations talk about, oh, we're going water positive, or we're initiating these green bonds or blue bonds, how much of it is marketing and how much of it is actionable? I don't know if either of you have thoughts on that. Start with you, Keith, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we've had a few conversations recently about this. I mean, you know, I think the challenge, it's one thing to sort of like set an emissions limit for a country or a state and create a certificates market, like the way it happens in renewable energy. With water, it's more challenging. You almost need to look at it more on a river basin level, because it is very local. And the targets or objectives that companies are setting are pretty much, you know, self-calibrated.
Self-regulated too.
Self-regulated, yeah. Self-calibrated, self-reported. So, you know, I mean, I think it gives everyone a little bit of peace of mind to think that corporations are caring more about how much water they use. But, you know, I think the challenge that we even have as a research company is, how do you compare apples to apples? How do you look at Coca-Cola India versus Pepsi US versus Kraft Switzerland? You know, there really isn't, let's say, a basic set of metrics. Yes, there are suggestions out there as to how to measure water footprint and targets, but, you know, just understand what is the most efficient way to reach those targets. What is the impact? Is it very local? Is there a broader context to that? I think that's where it gets challenging, and where, you know, we're all hoping as an industry that the water sector evolves and that does become more measurable, and we can hold corporations more accountable for that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting when we look at, I mean, you raise a really good point. Like, and also just more, even more basically, how do you define reuse, right? So, or reuse or on-site point of use, wastewater treatment reuse, to mishmash a bunch of words. But, you know, Pepsi does one thing, or Nabisco, at their facilities, they're treating their high organic wastewater. They're reusing it for cooling or even irrigation at their local facility. Where BHP Billiton, back to Chile or other places, they are, you know, they're remote, they're reusing water. But what is really reuse? Are they just moving water from storage, you know, one place to another and moving it around? How much of it? It's a different type of reuse. It's also a different scale. So I think we've made inroads, at least internally, research-wise, you kind of have to compare peers, right? You look at the fashion industry, or you look at the beverage, or even just breweries themselves. You know, how are they doing it? You can't really compare the breweries or food and beverage to mining or power. They're really two different issues. And I think the water industry as a whole struggles a bit with that. That's what makes the scalability hard, right? It's hard enough to go from one brewery to another, but to go from one brewery to the power sector is a totally different animal. So, yeah, and I would also add to that, it seems like, well, money's cheap these days, right? You know, there's plenty of capital out there for companies to invest as well. The ESG, every day there's something about ESG in the news. So everybody's sort of hopped up on it and what it means. And it's not just the food and beverage companies. We're also talking about, you know, even the water vendors themselves. You know, I know that firms like, you know, like Xylem, for instance, they've been active and increasingly active. They've launched green bonds, and they're deploying other tools related to this market as well. So, sort of stepping back a little bit, Chloe, one thing that I'd be curious to hear about is, because we've looked at, is the desal market. There's been some news. It's come up in our own research conversations, whether it be what's happening with Hyflux in Singapore, but there's been some activity in places in the Middle East, as I guess maybe as expected. What's going on there?
Yes, absolutely. So in the Middle East and North Africa in general, several projects have recently been opened to bidders or closed with selected winners. And countries are moving forward with their infrastructure development strategies. For instance, Kuwait over the summer has invited bidders to submit proposals for an EPC and O&M contract for a reverse osmosis desalination plant. The country has also begun the pre-qualification phases of major independent water and power projects. And it's really part of the country's strategy to scale up its power generation capacity by over 50% over the next 20 years. We've seen also a few projects in Saudi Arabia. The Saudi Water Partnership Company selected bidding consortium for three of its independent sewage treatment plants. The country also requested expression of interest to be submitted for a new water transmission pipeline of over 1,100 kilometers with a 35-year build, operate, own, and transfer project. It's actually the Saudi Arabia's third independent water transmission pipeline, and again, is part of the country's efforts and overall strategy to improve water supply and reduce its dependence on non-renewable groundwater. Another big announcement from Saudi Arabia over the summer was the suspension of the privatization process of the Ras El Khair water and power plants. It was one of the several assets the country has been putting on sale as part of its development strategy to diversify revenue away from oil.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that the whole discussion about privatization in Saudi Arabia has been going on for a while. I wonder if this, and on all fronts, right? It'll be interesting to see how that ultimately plays out. I mean, desal is one of the areas that we've been, I mean, we actually cut our teeth in the early days looking at desal company strategies and been tracking that at definitely the large scale activity. So it'll be interesting to see what happens, whether it be in Saudi Arabia, but it's also just a long-term play. Related to that, I think there's something that I came across recently was talking about hydrogen markets and whereas the Middle East could play a big role in that because they have water supplies through desal and they may be necessary, but they also have power needs and it could be a way of diversifying as well. So that would be interesting. Before we jump off, anything else you guys want to throw into the hat when it comes to global water that might be of interest?
Well, I think it's interesting. You know, we've had this ongoing theme around digitalization, obviously, and you know, we've put a lot of research on the US, more and more on Europe. And I think, you know, kind of coming out of the pandemic, looking at deal flow, looking at how cities and countries are going to tackle these huge challenges around water, I think for us, what's going to be exciting is to see how some of these digital solutions are going to be leveraged. I know that's been kind of our mantra over the last couple of years is that, you know, there's a lot of good technology out there that's found its way into the power industry, into telecoms, banking, et cetera. And I think a big question for us is how is that going to address some of these challenges over the next couple of years in a meaningful way? And I'm not just talking about deploying smart meters, but I'm talking about, you know, are we going to see much better, cheaper monitoring technologies out there that help deal with droughts and floods? Are we going to start to see, you know, much more use of data that's going to plan asset management, infrastructure planning? So I think that's obviously an undercurrent and an important theme that we've been following.
Yeah, I think to that point, and maybe this is a bit of a plug for Eric Bendler, he just put out a perspective looking at, I mean, this is US focused, but it's interesting when it comes to digital solutions and how they're being deployed or even how they're accepted at the regulatory level. I know in this case, Fort Bend, Indiana, and this was really a Xylem project. They had proposed, they were under consent decree to address stormwater issues. And what they ended up doing was they proposed using digital solutions and technologies as an alternative to sort of the traditional pipes and pumps approach, engineered approach. And it was accepted as a solution. Now it's reportedly expected to save, you know, I think it was 40 or 60% of the cost of the project. I mean, it was going to cost $700 million. Fort Bend is not a huge place. For those not in the know, it's the home of Mayor Pete, But that being said, that'll be interesting to see how that plays out. And we've had a lot of discussion about the UK and it being a bit of an incubator for digital solutions. Now the question is, how sustainable or how real is that market? It's another question. I mean, you could also look to Australia and other places, but I guess adoption or acceptance is a key part of that at the regulatory and utility level.
Yeah, no, you know, I mean, and as we've seen, we've had clients that we've been working with lately, and they're really, you know, they're not thinking pie in the sky, this is a cool technology. I think they're really saying, okay, these are combined sewer overflows. How do we, you know, optimize use of storage capacity like they're doing, MNET and Xylem are doing in South Bend to address those challenges? Or could you be putting lower cost sensors on a sewer network or under manholes that could help detect and create better predictive models around sewer flows? So, you know, we've had clients coming to us with that. I think, you know, also just around leakage, you know, I think there's a lot of countries in the world that are, you know, they face a lot of scarcity. They have leaky pipes. One of the quickest ways to have more water is to lose less water. How do you do that cheaply? I think that's another area where there's lots of good technology out there. It's a question of, you know, if there's not going to be regulation, is there at least another business case around the fact that they're running out of water? And, you know, I think we've looked at South Africa as an example of that. We've seen it to some extent in California, and I think we're going to see that more and more. So, you know, as we look around the world, it's also interesting to think about how some of these technologies are going to find markets around the world as well.
Yeah, I would agree with that. So, well, why don't we wrap it up with, as I always ask, Chloe, we'll start with you. Like, what are you working on? And yeah, what can we expect coming from you over the next weeks or months?
A few consulting projects at the moment, covering Europe and Asia. And I think one of the my objectives for the end of the year is to work more on the global forecast, and especially look at emerging markets.
Nice. What about you, Keith?
Yeah, so a lot, obviously a lot going on. We've been helping a smart sewers technology provider understand its market better and find partners. We're also looking at, you know, the broader market for digital analytics for some major corporate players. We are also looking at how software is finding its way around the world into spending for municipal utilities. We've also been looking at the pumping segment quite a bit lately and how those markets are evolving, both for smaller and larger pumps. So yeah, a bit of everything aside from just trying to get a handle on our outlooks for CapEx spend globally in municipal water. So yeah, it's going to be a busy fourth quarter.
Yeah, it's been, quite honestly, particularly on the consulting side, it's been a crazy year. And back to my good point crazy. About what's a frothy good market. Good crazy, not a complaint. It's a good problem to have, I can tell you that. I'll tell you that for free. So, all right, guys. Well, thanks a million. It was a big windy road around the world, but I thought hopefully it's helpful to the listeners out there just to kind of see what we're thinking about, particularly outside of the U.S. And if anybody has any questions, you can always reach out to us. So Keith, Chloe, thanks a million. We'll talk soon.
Thank you.
All right. Take care.
See ya. All right. Well, that was great to jump around the world. So before we sign off, all I ask is that you subscribe to Water Values Podcast and the Future Water Podcast. Both of them, we got two of them. Take advantage of the opportunity. Also, if you have any questions about this podcast or what Bluefield does, you can send us a note at waterexperts@bluefieldresearch.com with any topic ideas or questions that you might have. Lastly, as always, tell a friend about it because we hope it's interesting. This podcast and these water industry insights have been brought to you by the one and only Bluefield Research. To learn more about us, bluefieldresearch.com. Take care. Be well. Be safe. Talk soon.